Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. How are you all today?
So, let me see, left and right, I think all season parking. Yeah. So, I observed that today is the second session on the Diamond Sutra. The first session, we went through the title part of it. Yeah, we went through the title on the Jingang and Bore. Can you remember the meaning of Jingang, diamond? Can you remember? Oh, you're new. Tell us your name and how you got to know about this group.
I'm Karen, student exchange.
I see. Welcome. So this SGC, Spiritual Group Cultivation, we usually have short chanting, short meditation, and then some not so short Dharma sharing. Yeah. So sometimes we will have different topics, yeah, every week. Sometimes like this is part of a series. So decided to cover the Diamond Sutra. Students over the years have been asking about it. So I'm taking the opportunity to learn together. So twice a month. So we have our volunteers doing the recording, so they will put it up onto the YouTube. Yeah. So as a result, some of the SGC members, they start to go online, then they don't come for class. Yeah. Then sometimes those who ask for the sutra, they don't come after that. Yeah. But I always remember my teacher, my late ordination teacher's attitude. When he set up his own center and he started sharing on the Yogacara Bhumi Sastra, I don't think there's many people with him also. Yeah. Maybe even half of this, one third of this. Yeah. But his attitude is always, as he's so-called teaching, he's also learning. Yeah. So it's like, every day do you eat? Say yes. Do you have your lunch, your dinner, your breakfast? Do you sleep at night? Yeah. So, do you need people to eat with you, then you eat? Some people do, you know. So for some people, especially those people who are patoying, if the boyfriend, girlfriend don't eat with them, then they don't want to eat. Yeah. So then that makes our life very difficult. Usually, if people don't eat, we still eat. People don't sleep. Do we sleep? We also sleep. Eating and sleeping, sometimes we are affected by how other people are. But there's one thing that we are not affected. Breathing. Whether your boyfriend come or don't come, you also breathe. Yeah. So, we should have the same attitude. If we treat the Dharma like breathing, as important as breathing, then we will breathe the Dharma. We will learn Dharma whether people come or not. Doesn't matter. That's why sometimes with the Buddhist Society in NTU, in NUS, when they tell me that, exam is coming, so they need to stop all activities 1 month beforehand. So I ask them, so 1 month before exam, do you stop sleeping? Do you stop having your meals? Sometimes having a meal can take longer than, attending a Dharma class. Yeah, but we still do it. Yeah. So it boils down to a matter of priority. Yeah. In the past, when I hear my teacher say that as he's teaching, he's actually learning, I used to think that he's being too humble, you know. Yeah. So after I come back, somehow people ask me to share, to teach. So I also try. Then try. Eh? At first, when I give a class, I feel like, wow, I'm really teaching, you know. Then you feel a bit more pressured. Then later on, I realize that, yeah, actually, I learn a lot when I'm so-called teaching. Yeah. So, I don't know whether you all will learn, but I'm learning. So I hope you all also learn. Yeah. Hey, there's a gentleman behind. Have you introduced before? You? The one right behind, yes. Have you introduced before? Last week introduced, the family, okay. Yeah, next time I must give you a tag. Then when I look at you, then you... How come you all sit so far behind? Usually in an airline, you come late, check in late, then you sit behind. Yeah. Over here, we have business class seats always available. So, where did we stop? We stop at the Bora. Yeah, Jingang Bora. Yeah, Jingang Bora, Polo Meeting. So we finished at the Bora. Do you remember the different meaning of Bora? Can you remember? I cannot remember, go and watch the YouTube, I won't repeat. but Bora is wisdom in English. In Sanskrit is Prajna. In Pali is Panya. Yeah, it has we went through a few different meaning. Yeah, why it is called wisdom. It is able to vanquish defilements. It is able to remove our attachment to meaning. Yeah, but at the same time, not be bounded by meaning, but using words to express the truth, which is beyond words. Yeah, and so on. We went through that. So this week we are going to go through Polomi. In some of the translations, then we have Polomi to, Parami and Paramita. Yeah, they are referring to the same phrase. So what is this? Polomi to or Polomi. 是金刚般若的作用, as the function of the diamond wisdom. So of course, again, diamond is not our real diamond. It's a metaphor. So it means unbreakable. Yeah, the unbreakable wisdom. So those who have attended the Heart Sutra, you will know that in the Heart Sutra, I have explained, it basically means Dao Bian. Yeah, so, Polo Mi Fan Dao Zhong Gu Hua, 就是 Dao Bian. Yeah. Actually, if you listen to my teacher's talk on the Heart Sutra, then you will see that almost maybe 80% of what I teach, except for the Laksa, is based on what my teacher has taught. Yeah. So when I read through this, I'm like, yes. Yeah. 就是到彼岸, to reach the other shore. Yeah, to reach the other shore. Yeah. So this is the first meaning. The first meaning is 从此岸生死到彼岸涅槃. Yeah. So 此岸生死苦彼岸涅槃乐. So from this shore to the other shore. Yeah, that's this parable. So describing that this shore, the shore of birth and death, of samsara, the shore of suffering. Yeah, to cross over to the other shore. What is at the other shore? The other shore has no birth and death. No birth and death, no defilements, no worry, no stress, no income tax to pay, no need to choose, no trouble in your mind, no stress. The other shore of Nibbana, cessation of suffering. Bi'an Nibbana. For us, we've been on this shore for so long. For how long? The Buddha say, since beginningless time. And as a result, if we don't learn from the Buddha, we don't know that there's actually a possibility. The possibility that our suffering can actually end. And we don't realize that. But at the same time, in our day-to-day, we have been seeking happiness. So through the Buddha's wisdom, we see that the happiness we seek, actually is still on this shore. Still on this shore. Thus give us pleasure, give us momentary happiness, but still on this shore. Incomplete. And then through the Buddha's teaching and his wisdom, we learn that there's another state. Another state that is beyond beyond suffering. What is this state? The Buddha gave it the name Nirvana or Nibbana. And it basically means the end of defilements. End of defilements. So, 由生死的慈岸到涅槃的彼岸。 阿罗汉以上的圣人才能达到这个境界，因为他已经把欲界、色界、无色界的烦恼完全消除，不再流转生死，能到涅槃了，所以名为彼岸，到彼岸。So, those who are arahants and above, first stage, second stage, third stage, not yet, is crossing. Arahants and above. Arahants and above have reached the other shore. So arahants and including the enlightened bodhisattvas and of course Buddha have reached the other shore. Meaning they have removed their defilements. In my teacher's explanation, he highlighted the three realms. The three realms or the three worlds. 欲界、色界、无色界, we have gone through in different classes. Some students, after attending SGC for a while, they say, Sifu, do you want to conduct basic Buddhism course? Then I'm like, why? Actually, what they want to tell me, which some students tell me, is they feel that it's more systematic. Then day one, you learn this. Day two, you learn this. Day three, you learn this. Like that, then after 1 year or 2 years, then I can give you a diploma. Then you feel like you have known Buddhism. That's one way. Some people learn better in that way. But that way of learning assumes that everybody must start at the same pace. And sometimes when we learn that way, we end up accumulating knowledge. Sometimes we end up that way. So, if you attend my class, you find that, in a way, my class is always very unsystematic. I seldom give you a chart and say, there are 10 points, and then each point, there are 3 here, 5 there, 6 here, 7 here. I seldom teach in this way. I usually just go by a topic and then I will bring supplant everything. Then leave it up to you to go and figure out. No, I don't leave it up to you. I explain until the explanation flew out from your ear. I like to think that the Buddha teach this way also. The difference is the Buddha, he teach directly to the point for that person who asked the question. That's why some students say that they like to listen to my Q&A. And sometimes why I always tell students, if you have questions that you need to solve, you need to arrange for counseling. Yeah, because it's quite hard that I happen to touch on it during class. Yeah, so if you attend enough of my class, you will hear this 欲界、色界、无色界. Yeah, but you will not see me conduct a basic Buddhism class. And then on the chapter on the world view of Buddhism. Yeah, I can also. All this is inside. Yeah, so you cannot say I never teach also. But I never have one class to say, okay, today we are going to touch on the different world in Buddhism. Yeah. So what is the 欲界、色界、无色界? Sensual desire realm, form, formless. Yeah, the three different world. Kama, loka, then rupa, loka, arupa, loka. The different world. This three world is overlapping. It encompasses the six realms, the five destinations. Yeah. Some of you who are newer, maybe flying across your head. Some of you have heard like Aptim time. So maybe sometimes I should ask you all to discuss, and then you all must go and teach. Then you all will remember. In the sensual desire realm, or sensual desire world, exists all six realms. From the upper human, heavenly, and then Asura, then we have we have the hungry ghost, animal, and hell. All the six realms are encompassed within the sensual desire world. In the form and formless state, in this two upper world, there exists only the heavenly realm. Yeah. Form and formless is only the heavenly. Yeah. So imagine yourself, the slide is down, I'm drawing there. On one side is six realms, the other side is the three worlds. So the upper part of the sensual desire realm is the sensual desire heavenly realm. And then the form world is also part of heaven. Formless world is part of heaven. Then the remaining five realms is part of the lower of the sensual desire realm. Okay? So far so good? So this is what we... You know, sometimes in the Chinese movie, then you got the 妖魔鬼怪. Then they will say, 你要逃出山... 那个三界怎么可能? Or whatever, the 三界. It's actually talking about this. It's not that we borrow from them, it's they borrow from us. Because Jing Yong also learned some Buddhism. So many colorful things. Wow, wonderful. Wow, then throw in Zaplang into all the movies. Yeah, so all the 天龙八部 from Buddhism. So why is there mentioned about these three? Because these three worlds is describing the different worlds of preoccupation that the inhabitants in these worlds have. In the world of sensual desire, the inhabitants are preoccupied with sensual desire. In the form world, they are preoccupied with form. In the formless world, they are preoccupied with formlessness. The form and formless is a bit abstract to us. Yeah, but if you do a bit of meditation, then you know that as you come closer, not even to first jhana, you just do a bit more meditation, then you become more preoccupied with your meditation object than the external worldly things. Whereas if a person normally, we are preoccupied with what? We are preoccupied with what we see, what we hear, what we smell, taste, touch, yeah, the first five senses. Even in terms of our mind, we are thinking about what was seen, what was heard, what was smelled, what was tasted, what was touched before. Or we are preoccupied with what is to be seen in the future, what is to be heard, to be smelled, to be tasted, to be touched in the future. Yeah, we are ultimately still transfixed with the five senses. Then, of course, there are those among us who are less so. Not everybody is so, you know, even though we may think, but maybe there's a difference in degree as well. To the degree we are preoccupied, to the degree it becomes a stumbling block. Yeah. To that degree that we are preoccupied, to that degree our mind is stuck there, cannot transcend. Yeah, cannot transcend. So, over here, 因为他已经把欲界、色界、无色界的烦恼全面消除。 Yeah. So, all the defilements related to sensual desire, related to form and formless, have been removed, eradicated. Yeah. Such a person is Arahant. Yes. Yes, I never explained, because I explained many times already. Yeah. So, do you need me to explain? Do you? Anyone need me to explain? Okay, then I explain. Yeah. Because I have mentioned it so many times that I paisei. Later I repeat again. Then you are, aiya, sifu, this sifu, gong lai gong ke san jie, san jie, san jie. So, form and formless. The form and formless realm, they are both considered, not considered, they are both part of the heavenly realm. In the sensual desire realm, there's also heavens, different layers of heavens, yeah, or different levels of heaven. So the difference, first primary difference is their focal point. Those in the sensual desire realm, they still enjoy sensual pleasure. They are still preoccupied with the eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, body. They are still preoccupied with sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. Form and formless, they go beyond the first five senses. So, to describe form, then we describe formless. But to describe form realm, the form world, we have to understand how you get reborn there. When the Buddha described the different realms, he don't just describe the way they are, but he described the path that leads to that realm. In the case of form, then it is the practice of samadhi, to the point where you can reach jhana. So, then it's related to what we have been doing, meditation. So in the Buddhist meditation, there are two main parts, samatha and vipassana. Yeah? Or if you use Sanskrit, shamatha and vipassana. Yeah. So just some slight pronunciation difference. The first part is quietening the mind. So if you quieten the mind suitably, then, and most importantly, withdraw from the first five senses. This is the technique. Yeah, it's by virtue that you withdraw from the first five senses that the mind can become truly quietened. Even more importantly, is to remove. Why do we withdraw? To see clearly that the pleasure that arises from the senses can only gratify that much. It's only when you see the full gratification that there's a limit to it. And then to see its shortcoming as well. That the pursuit of sensual pleasure has its shortcoming. Then the mind become disinterested in the five senses.
Isn't it the same as detachment?
Well, short of, maybe it's just semantics, but So detachment is a very broad word. Yeah, this is a very specific technique. Yeah. Further, detachment, again, because it's just an English word. To begin with, I never say it's different. Yeah, so I don't know whether there's anyone who says it's different. But it's not exactly the same also. Yeah, because this approach doesn't require you to forcibly extract yourself. Because it is through seeing clearly its shortcoming. For example, some years back, there is the melanin milk powder, the Haising New Nifen. 1 week before the news came out, father, mother go to the shopping mall, very happily buying. The moment they know that the milk powder contains some ingredients that is harmful to the baby, what happened? They automatically, you know, get repulsed by it. They automatically, you know, stop buying. In fact, whatever they have already bought, they may throw it away, or they, if it's new, they may bring it back to the shop and ask for a refund. Do we need someone to force them? Do they need to force themselves? Ah, I must give this away. Don't need. Yeah. So sometimes we say that's the distinction between detachment and the Buddhist practice. Yeah, but it's just a word. So detachment appear to have this connotation, but it's just a word. So some people may say, oh, I practice detachment, but they are really practicing the Buddhist approach, where they are not forcing themselves in that sense. Okay, but the important thing here, if the mind is suitably distant and withdrawn from the sensual pleasure, then the mind experiences a different kind of bliss, yeah, which is different from the pleasure of the senses. Yeah, even just momentary release, momentary separation from it, but it must be sustained for a while. And then, it is like if you have been if you go shopping for the whole day, and for the whole day you carry your handbag, then you carry this, carry that. You do know that you are tired, but it's only when you go back home and you put down all your bags, then you realize how tired you were. Yeah. So similarly, only when the person is fully withdrawn from sensual pleasure, then you know, what you thought was pleasure is actually impinging on your senses. It's actually base, it's actually with shortcoming, with problems. But if a person succeeds in doing this, then they, from within, the bliss, whether you want to use a technical term, joy and rapture, yeah, or bliss, or what, or high, as I explained to some students, that arises. Yeah, this initial bliss arises because of that separation from the external stimulation. When that happens, then the person, over time, can sustain separation from the senses because you found something that's better. So those who do samatha meditation sometimes encounter this. You start to have no interest in worldly things. From a worldly conventional society point of view, this person has depression. Because no more interest in worldly things. Yeah, but not depression. I'm not saying that there's no depression. Some people really, yeah, they don't have anything that interests them. Yeah, but this person who practice meditation have something that interests them. It's just that it's not things that you can see outside. From first jhana to second, third, fourth, I will just give in brief. We can have more discussion next week on this. But if this person slowly trained the mind can become very supple, the object of meditation can gain mastery, then the object at will is clearly defined in the mind. You can hold it at a certain size. You want to increase the size, decrease the size. You want to expand. You want to permeate. You know, all you can train the mind to that point. Most of the time when we start, cannot even observe the breath. Yeah, observe a few seconds, maybe we can. Yeah, observe after a while, the breath and the thoughts are all together. Er he yi. Then later san he yi. Yeah, sleeping and having thoughts and meditating together. If we were to persist, then gradually we are able to master the object. Maybe next week we should discuss this. But once we go through the whole sequence, just going through technique, haven't do it, you'll find that the Buddhist meditation is not a, how do I put it? It's not a mystical thing, you know. Nothing mystical. You find that it is a very, very step-by-step, you can almost say logical, that there is a proper sequence and proper explanation. You do this, and once you master this, that's why you can do that. And that's why there's no this problem present. Yeah, the whole sequence is very clearly, you know, laid out. Yeah, so it's nothing mystical. Or you just do that suddenly, boom, or suddenly you don't know why also. No, you know clearly. So let me just jump forward to fourth jhana. At fourth jhana, the person can master the object so clearly that he can, at will, permeate boundless space, with his object at will, and maintain it there. He can also remove it at will. Cannot give you example because you have got to meditate, because otherwise it's just words. But from the fourth jhana to the formless state, first, the four formless state, 空无边处定, 事无边处定, 无所有处定, 非想, 非非想处定, 空无边处定, the base of infinite space. So now, I have to give you an example. Infinite space. What is infinite space? Now if I ask you, 10 meters square, 100 meters square, those who are real estate agent, they know very well. Those who are keen in buying and selling houses also know very well. When we say 900 square meter, or they know roughly a 4-room flat or 5-room flat. 100 square meter, 1,000 square feet, about 5-room. 1,002, 5E or something, I don't know. Some students tell me, not that I know. You see, we're talking about space. But without the walls, you cannot define the space. Without the flooring there, now we go to open field, ask you to visualize how big, cannot visualize. So in order to have infinite space, the meditator must first establish infinite object. And then using that object, he demarcate. Polana, are you taking video or taking photo? Photo 一两张就可以了, 不用一整个上课在那边瞄来瞄去的, 直接用眼睛看比较容易。 So, using the object, he demarcate the infinite space. And then, once he has firmly established, and that's why it must be done at fourth jhana, because the person has mastery over the object, demarcating the infinite space with the object, then he removes the object. Whatever is left is the infinite space. So I'm don't try to figure out how this is the way it's done, okay? And the interesting thing is that so the crossover process, it's actually a technique. It's not like you just meditate, then suddenly you enter into this state. It's that using that object, then you can have a sense of how big the space is. But you need to be at the later stage to be able to remove the object at will. Because usually, you either have or don't have. Either you can see the object or you cannot see the object. Not mastery yet. Only at the later stage, fourth jhana, then you have mastery. Expand all the way, and then you remove. And when you remove, you really remove, and that's really the space there. Now, at this point, I must ask the question for your Sufu. Do that for what? Yeah. If you just look at this step by itself, it seems quite meaningless. Like, might as well use AutoCAD. Ding, oh, eh, oh. Yeah. Yeah. But the problem is that AutoCAD is the thing outside. No power, no enlightenment. So, what's the point of doing all this? You see, if you were to think about it, maybe it's still abstract. But when you actually go and try, then you know that the whole process is about training the mind. Training the mind through this technique. But this technique is not as an end by itself. It's just a tool to train the mind to be able to, at will, manipulate itself. Yeah, so it's very interesting. Yeah, sometimes when you learn the technique, then you'll find, like that for what? Yeah, don't be so sissy, like that for what? it's like, you learn parabolic equation for what? Up to you to go and apply, ma. Correct or not? Teach you maths. 小明有三粒橙, then 小花吃了两粒, 剩下几粒. Doesn't mean that that's all you can do with maths, but yeah? Then you don't have friends called Xiaoming, Xiaohua, how? Correct or not? Up to us to apply. Let me give you an example of application. Think about it. The whole sequence, and I'm just giving it in brief, the whole sequence, training your mind to hold an object in your mind clearly, without disturbance, with stability. Think about it. If our kids, our students in school is able to do that when they are attending class, you think they will not remember what was taught? Not 100%, 95% remember. Isn't it? But most of the time we don't teach kids to do this. Yeah? And the environment, not just we lah. Yeah, the whole society, we don't hold this as valuable. What do we hold as valuable? American has talent. Singapore has talent. Wow. Oh, yeah. Give you a prize. Yeah. Someone sit down there in the mind. Shh. What are you doing, man? That's so boring. Yeah, it's boring. Yeah, it's boring. Yeah. Right. Even adults think it's boring. Yeah. But if we can master the mind, yeah, you can do amazing things. And it's not just about studying. You think about it, for the person to go through all that, it doesn't mean that meditator is always in a clean room, in a sound room, soundproof. Yeah, go to a soundproof room, all you hear is tee, you know, then sit down there, tee, then switch off all the light. Yeah, or you go to some of those centers, they have the sensory deprivation tank, you know. They have this like capsule, they fill with water, saline water, yeah, and it's adjusted to have the same buoyancy as our body. So when you go in, you're floating. Yeah. So some people suggest, hey, Sifu, how about if you meditate inside there? Well, if your mind is restless, no? Yeah. So the point about that training is, it's not that you have a perfect environment, but to train the mind until it's impervious to externalities. Then this person, you when you go on a business trip, you don't need business class seat. You take economy, small area, no claustrophobia. Yeah, you just close your eyes, you visualize infinite space. Oh, palace seat. Yeah, but if the meditator reached that point, even when he opened his eyes, it's boundless. No issue. Not affected. Then you don't have to... That's why meditators will not be so concerned about where they stay, whether it's big or small. Like blah, 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 blah. That's why they can just go and sit under the tree. Sleep in the cave, no problem. Yeah. Our worldly education, in a way, nothing wrong with it. But we only teach our kids, teach ourselves about the outside world. We never focus on what is inside. So we only teach how to manipulate the thing outside, how to change the world outside to suit us, not change inside to transform outside. Yeah. So, from formless onwards, 空无边处定，事无边处定，无所有处定，非想非非想处定. I'll cover in detail next week. Huh? Next week's topic. Okay, don't ask me again. Where is that? Who? Next week's topic. Jhana, form and formless world. Okay? Otherwise, we go online then. Oh. Yeah. And the thing is, if a person just do this meditation, it's easy to become so preoccupied, then become a limitation. The jhana helps to transcend the sensual desire. Transcending sensual desire achieve the jhana. But if you don't transcend this, then the jhana becomes an obstacle to liberation. Can become an obstacle as well. So, in order to transcend it, in the Buddhist meditation, as we practice, once we master each stage, we have to reflect and contemplate on its shortcoming. So, this is not something that's unique to some particular tradition. This is taught by the Buddha in all the different teachings. Before you reach first jhana, you must contemplate on the shortcomings of sensual desire. Once you reach first jhana, you must contemplate on the benefit of second jhana and the faults and shortcoming of first jhana. Then you can proceed to second jhana. Yeah, second jhana, likewise, benefit of third jhana, shortcoming of second jhana. Once you reach third jhana, then shortcoming of third jhana, benefit of fourth jhana. And when you reach fourth jhana, if you don't proceed, you also get stuck there. You must then contemplate on the shortcoming of fourth jhana and supreme benefit of nibbana. But if a person don't do that, at some point, pass away. If a person can abide in that jhana and pass away in that way, the mind inclining in the jhana, then the past cultivation will materialize as rebirth in the form world. So as long as you still have those seeds and you still are attached to it, then those seeds will arise, whether it's sensual desire seeds, whether it's form seeds or formless seeds, then you are still in samsara. In all the different world, no realm is permanent. Some of the heavenly realms are very long. Yeah? Very, very long. How long? In terms of kalpa. How many hundred thousands kalpa? How long is one kalpa? The Buddha described, if there is a granite block that is several kilometers high, several kilometers wide, and once every 100 years, a man were to climb up the mountain with a kasi cloth, wipe once, come down. 100 years later, another man do that, go up, wipe one more time, come down. Every 100 years, someone were to do that. over time, that granite block would slowly be worn down. When that granite block has been worn down completely, one kalpa has not passed. This is how the Buddha described how long a kalpa is. Yeah. So, human realm is very short. Yeah. But human realm varies. In one of the sutta, the Buddha said that at some point, human realm is 60,000 lifespan, the number of years. But even that is considered short. Even that is considered short. Yeah. So, but to us now, how long is human life in Singapore? Average lifespan, 80 to 85. Let's say you live up to 100 years. Can you imagine 150 years? Live until 150 years? A bit hard to imagine. How about 200 years? Twice the age. If you can live up to 200 years, assuming good health, wow, a lot of things to do. Wow, then you got to buy 2 HDB because 200 years, 99 not enough. Yeah, you need to buy freehold. Yeah, but you can work until 130 years old, then retire. Yeah, assuming you have good health, why not, right? Yeah. But what about if you have to? If you can live 500 years, how about 1,000 years? For us, because our lifespan is averaging about 80 plus years, once you cross 100, it's like doesn't matter anymore, you know. So, but Buddhist worldview is very broad. So we the Buddha gave quite specific ranges of lifespan for different realms. Yeah, I suspect for us, once you go past 200 years, it's as good as eternity really. 500 years and 1,000 years, no difference already. It's very long. Yeah. That's why some of the freehold is not freehold, it's 999. But 999 is as good as forever already. Singapore is only 52 years. Oh. Yeah. So anyway, in Buddhism, among the different realms, there are differences. Heavenly realm, more pleasure, less no suffering. Yeah, suffering only comes at the end. Lower realms, suffering throughout, but still vary. Some have high intensity and persistent suffering. Some have sporadic states of suffering. Yeah, others, different types. Human realm, we have a bit of suffering, a bit of pleasure, and in between, a lot of neither pleasure nor painful experience. So, despite everything, then in Buddhism we say, all these are temporal, imperfect states. Yeah, temporal, imperfect states. So, the ideal is to transcend all these temporary states of existence. Yeah. So, in all the Buddhist tradition, we seek to transcend the 6 realms, 5 destinations, the 3 worlds. So, arahants have done that. So, one meaning of parami is to cross over this cycle of birth and death. Second meaning is, second meaning, that means this shore, 有相. What is 有相? Meaning in the mind, there is something in your mind. I will explain more. Let's just say signless, okay? Signless. Yeah. Sometimes the translation, they use signless or featureless. So this shore, we can say signless. Sign with sign or without sign. Yeah. This shore is with sign, the other shore without sign. Yeah. 有相跟无相. But what does 有相跟无相 means? Basically, 有相 means something in your mind. What does it mean by something in your mind? So my teacher gave the example, it is like our hand. Now, if our hand, we see something, and then we say, hey, this is quite interesting, we can take it. Now our hand has something. Then maybe we put it down. Then there's nothing there. So our hand represents our heart, our mind. Our mind sees something outside. When we see, we say we use our eyes to see. But our mind grab hold of it and put it inside. Although we walk off, but that thing is inside our mind. This is what we mean by have something in your mind. Yu-xiang. Wu-xiang doesn't mean that, or you see, don't know what is there. Sifu, did you have class today? Don't know. Wu-xiang, don't know. Did anyone attend SGC? Don't know. I didn't see anybody. Not that you didn't see, it's that you see, but you don't grasp on. Doesn't mean cannot see. Then Buddha walk around. No. In fact, the Buddha see even more clearly than us. For us, we also see, but we only see what we like and what we don't like. What we like, we remember, we hold and put in our mind. What we don't like, we also take and put in our mind. Our mind is only like and don't like, what I don't like. Everything else, we don't see. So that is not real seeing. Even for one person, we tend to only see the things that we like and don't like. There are many other parts about that person we don't see. So we only grasp on to the part, and from there, then defilements arise. Yeah, and that's why using this Tao Bianchi, with sign, with grasping to no sign. So, you 有相, 无相, 就是波罗蜜, 就是波罗蜜, 心里有相, 就会取着一切法, then you grasp all phenomena. 心若离一切取相, 取着, 才能离相, once it's free from all grasping, then we are free of the sign, yeah, free of preoccupation in our mind. Yeah. 一切四谛论, Yogacara Bhumisastra, 一切四谛论说, 最上舍, the most supreme relinquishment. 意即最殊胜的舍. Yeah, so the meaning is the most supreme. Yeah, the most supreme form of relinquishment. Yeah, 舍就是无着的意思. Yeah, so this relinquishment, what does it mean? It means non-grasping. 大菩萨的境界也可以说是殊胜舍. Yeah, so the great Bodhisattvas, their state is like that. Yeah. 但是最殊胜的舍为是佛的境界, but the most supreme is Buddha. Yeah, that state. 对凡夫而言,所有的圣人都是最上舍. Yeah, so with respect to unenlightened sentient beings, anyone who is enlightened is most supreme. But among enlightened ones, there are still distinction. Arahants, and then the great Bodhisattvas, stage 8, stage 10 and above. Yeah. And then, of course, highest is the Buddha. Yeah. So, I won't read through everything. Huh? This you can search on the internet, fayin.org. You want to read through in detail, you can also read through. Huh? Or do you all prefer I read through everything? How many of you want me to read through everything? Okay, nobody. Yeah. So, as always, whenever we learn Dharma, we must ask ourselves, so what? Yeah, it's like just now you ask. Yeah. So, like that then? We must always ask ourselves, how can this be applied? From 有相 到 无相. Using the example I mentioned, the moment you see, then you grasp, then you put inside your mind. And we tend to put the likes and dislikes. We ignore everything else. Consciously, unconsciously, we ignore everything else about that person, about the circumstances, about the situation. We only grasp on to the part that we see. Yeah. In fact, the part that we are attached to. Yeah. So we have to reflect on this. We have to go and see for ourselves, how is that in line with reality? And when we ingress in this way, how does that make us feel? Yeah. Currently, most of the time, that's how we are. Now we learn from the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, when we do this, then we are one-sided. We are grasping onto our own wrong thinking. Yeah. So what if we remind ourselves? The next time when we see something, we remind ourselves, am I grasping? Am I grasping? How do we know that we are grasping? When something is in your mind, you ask yourself, is that something happening now? Is that something happening now? Oh, that person scolded me. Oh, that person gave me a cha kuei diao or whatever. Okay, yeah. That person give me something I like. That person give me something I don't like. Yeah. Is it happening now? The person cut my lane, yeah, and so on and so forth. Is it happening now? If it's not happening now, then, and yet you are, how do we respond to it? If we are responding to it as though it's happening now, then it means that we are grasping onto it. Yeah, but actually it's not happening now. We are holding on to it. So sometimes students ask me, but Sifu, I feel very sad over that thing. Then I'm like, so is it happening now? Yeah. Those who come to me for counseling always hear me ask me, is it happening now? Now. Not happening, right? Yeah. If it's not happening now, then why is it affecting us? Actually, it's our grasping that's affecting us. Not that thing. That thing has really happened already. Yeah. Right now, it's not happening. If you do this reflection often, then a lot of things... okay lah. So soccer. Yeah. So I'm quite happy to... whenever I go through my teacher's text, then I feel like I'm talking to my teacher. Mm. So, 我们凡夫的心因为不能舍，就执着执着。 有一点事情，心就做种种的虚妄分别，所以遇见什么都有相。 Yeah, so that's the state of our mind. Yeah, being unenlightened. Whatever we encounter, yeah, we are not able to relinquish. Yeah. Once we come into contact, keep. That's why I cannot remember other things. Yeah, keep. Everything keep. Don't keep. If you go on a, let's say you go on a holiday, yeah, what do you want to keep? You keep memories, yeah. I mean, for the sake of discussion, you keep memories. Don't talk about supreme enlightenment yet, we keep memories. So maybe in a trip, you took photos of very nice scenery. Yeah, you keep that. Yeah. Then there's this guy who bump into you. Are you going to take a photo of that guy and then keep? Yeah. Are you going to hold on to that? Yeah. Out of 100 photos that you took for the holiday, are you going to spend 50 photos on that guy? You don't run away, come, take photo with you, selfie together, come. You bump into me. You think about it, right? Maybe for keepsake, you take a photo of him, just to remind yourself, you know, next time, if you encounter him, you want to slap him or what. I mean, that's your choice, you know. But for out of 100 photos, you shouldn't take more than one photo. Yeah, and one photo to me is one photo too much. Yeah. So why do we grasp? At least if you grasp onto the nice scenery, for a start, better than the guy who bumped into you. Yeah. But if you compare, if you talk about Supreme Enlightenment, then even the 100 photos of scenery, yeah, once you come back home, it's just photos, it's not the real thing anymore. It's the moment you take, it's over already. Yeah, that scene is over. Yeah, but there are different levels. So the most low level, put it aside first. So for a start, if you need to take nice photo, take nice photo. Okay. Yeah. If you want to, if you cannot let go of everything, or rather, if you still have to hold on to something, hold on to happy memories, hold on to wholesome aspects about people, for a start. Hold on to Dharma. A lot of students, after learning about non-attachment, first thing, Sifu, so Dharma, we cannot be attached also. If there's one thing you should be attached to for a start, is Dharma. Okay? Don't let go of Dharma so soon. Yeah. 我们用有相和无相对比,我的佛的心 能达到无相的境界, so compared to us, the Buddha can reach the state where the mind has no grasping at all. Doesn't mean the mind cannot cognize, cannot see anything. Precisely because they don't grasp onto things, that's why they can see everything clearly. For us, the moment we see someone, we grasp onto that particular aspect of that person that we like or we don't like. So we don't see the whole person. We only see the one part of that person that we think is important, that we are attached to. Everything else we don't see. So sometimes when we hear teachings, we feel like, oh, becoming enlightened seems like we become robot. We become, I am enlightened. I don't know what is happening. Sifu, how is the food? I don't know. Yeah. No. Actually, you know even clearer. Yeah. Like today over lunch, yeah, one of the students offered me the ginger mee sua. Then halfway through, suddenly she asked, the whole group of us eating, then she asked, Sifu, have you eaten the noodle? At first, I thought maybe she saw that I have one big bowl of the asam laksa, then that one. I thought she wanted to help me distribute. So I said, oh, I haven't tried. I really haven't tried. Then actually, she wanted to ask me, she said that she's not sure whether she's not feeling well, or is it that the food, you know, tastes a bit odd. So, let me try. So I tasted it. I said, a bit bland. Yeah. I'm not enlightened yet. But even if a person is enlightened, doesn't mean don't know. Yeah. We should know when it's bland, it's bland. When it's not bland, we should know it's not bland. When it's salty, we should know it's salty. When it's not salty, we should know it's not salty. The difference for enlightened one is they are not attached to any of them. So salty or not salty, they know, but they can accept also. They are not attached to a particular level of saltiness. So even if you don't give the food that is frequently what is offered to him or her, the person also knows. Yeah? Or usually you cook this way. One time you cook the same dish a different way. The enlightened being would also know, but not attached to either one. So, 从有相到无相, for us, a lot of thing inside lah. Yeah. Sometimes when we don't like that person or we like that person, before the person even offered, we already have an idea of how it's like. The person cook coffee, make coffee, cook noodle, cook rice, whatever. Before you even eat, actually you already have a bowl of noodle inside your mouth. You have a cup of coffee in your mind already. Then, that's why when you taste it, you are surprised or you are, yes, as expected. The moment you say, as expected, That means before that you have one coffee with you? During one of the meditation class, I did this experiment with them. Yeah. You, with a biscuit. Yeah. So I told them, close your eyes. Yeah. What if I change the biscuit or something? Yeah, then you eat. Then when they eat, I told them, if you when you eat the biscuit and there's a or either way, you already have a biscuit in your mind. You see, if let's say this is the biscuit, the moment you see it, maybe you have never eaten the biscuit before, maybe you have. But the moment you see it, in our mind, already have a biscuit. That's why sometimes when we eat certain food, when you eat it, we're like, how come it's like that one? The fact that we have this response is because the actual taste deviates from what we expect. The expectation is a biscuit in our mind. That is almost as real as what is outside. Is it as real? No. But we treat it as real as the one outside. That's why we are so surprised. That's why we are so surprised. It's like a real biscuit, no? The biscuit in our mind. Yeah. And based on that biscuit in our mind, then we discriminate the biscuit outside. Even the all those things that we have eaten before, because we have eaten before, so you have the first, let's say, laksa you have. After that, you form another laksa in your mind, which is what you experience of it, which includes actually the whole experience. The chit-chat with the friend, whatever happened, everything, you know. It's not just that bowl of laksa. Then the next time when you go there again, a few things change. That person is same person, but same, but different. Cooking environment, everything, maybe the same, maybe different. But ours is also different. Then when we eat it, now third bowl of laksa already. Fourth bowl of laksa. And yet we grasp on to this and that as this is the real one, that one is not real. Which one is real? Yeah, so this sutra is about this. Third meaning. 第三个解释, 修学圣道有成就的圣人, 他有出世间无漏, 无分别, 无相的智慧, 但还不圆满, 名为此岸。 Yeah, so just now, from suffering to no suffering, from sign to no sign, the distinction is still quite clear. Unenlightened, enlightened. Here, further distinction. Among even enlightened beings, here it says, has this person reached perfection? If it's not perfection yet, then it's this shore. The other shore is complete perfection. Complete perfection. Yeah. What is complete perfection? Then is 圆满, complete. Yeah. 到这个佛的境界. Yeah. With the supramundane, 出世间, 无漏, without flaw, 无分别, non-discriminating, 无相, signless wisdom. Yeah. Reach completion. Those enlightened ones at this stage also have all this, but haven't reached perfection. Yeah. So, you know, when we talk about parami or paramita, we usually talk about perfection. This is that meaning. Yeah. That means to reach the other shore is to reach perfection. For us, what is wuxiang roughly? Sifu, like that, explain laksa, this and that, roughly like 似懂非懂, like no, like don't know. Not to mention perfection. So there's these three layers. Totally with grasping, then with no grasping, then with no sign, and then no grasping. Then, but initially, maybe not so fluent yet. Still need effort. Still effortful. But when you reach perfection, effortless. Yeah, effortless. Completely, yeah, brought to perfection. So over here, 如果圆满成就, Hello, Bianca 来。 如果圆满成就佛一切种子智，一切种智。 Yeah, so the in the Mahayana teachings, there's a description of the Buddha. One of the quality is that he has the wisdom of all causes and conditions. 一切种智，是为彼岸。 So here the definition, third definition is to reach the level of Buddhahood, then is the other shore. Yeah. 由此岸到彼岸称为波罗蜜。 这样就把阿罗汉和一切菩萨鉴别出去，唯有佛才从此岸到彼岸，能离一切相，离一切分别，智慧究竟圆满，所以称为波罗蜜。 Yeah. So then, Arhans and enlightened Bodhisattvas is now separated out. Only Buddha on the other shore. Yeah. So we can look at it as many layers. So where are we? We are quite clearly, no confusion, we are on this shore. Yeah, haven't checked out yet. We are still queuing. Queue. Yeah. So, 这个是圆满成就的金刚般若才能达到的境界. Yeah. So, to reach that state, you need the unbreakable diamond perfection of wisdom. Then you can reach the other shore. Yeah. 即是佛所成就的阿耨多罗三藐三菩提, which is the perfect enlightenment, the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment. Yeah. 阿耨多罗三藐三菩提, we recited in the Heart Sutra. We find it in so many different sutras. 阿耨多罗, unsurpassed, 三藐三菩提, the perfect, unsurpassed, perfect enlightenment. Yeah. So, 这也就表示学习金刚般若波罗蜜经可以得圣道. Yeah. So, in the Heart Sutra, in the explanation of the title, I also highlighted this. Yeah, from the title itself, you can see the sequence of cultivation. And the purpose of this sutra is to help us to go from this shore to the other shore. Then my teacher explained 经. 简言之是指语言文字. Yeah, so in a way referring to the words, yeah, but some particular words. I've mentioned before, here my teacher never mentioned about the Siu Tuo Luo. In other places, he mentioned about Siu Tuo Luo, Sutra. So the original word means to tread. Yeah. Whatever words and descriptions, which is the finger pointing to the truth, yeah, 能全显跟所全显, that means that which is presented, that's the truth. The thing that presents, that is the Sutra. Those words, phrases, and expression that can express the truth in such a way that when we hear it, we cultivate accordingly, can align our body, speech, and mind with that of the enlightened one. It's called sutra. So, 佛菩萨大慈大智，大慈悲大智慧，这个。 迁就我们的程度 yeah. The truth itself beyond words. So my teacher is saying, by right the truth has no words. Ultimate reality has no words. Beyond concepts, 无相. But then, are we at that level? Cannot. Yeah. So 迁就我们, bear with us. So bear with us, what must they do? So they use things that we can understand. Explain to us. So using words and concepts to explain that which is beyond words and concepts. Yeah. 从有语言文字有相到无名言离相的涅槃. So the Dharma is like a bridge. One end, touching 此岸, the other end touching 彼岸. Yeah. So whenever you look at the Dharma teaching, there will always be this part that we can start off with understanding. But it will then point us towards another part which we're like, oh, what is that? Yeah, this is the beauty of the Dharma. Oh. Okay, so over here my teacher gave more elaboration. This Diamond Sutra, they are all together about 6 different translations. Mm. So here, just go through in brief. The first is Tao Qing San Zhang Fa Shi Jiu Mu Lo Shi So Yi. So this is the one that we are looking at. Yeah, this is the I mentioned in the first lesson, Kumarajiva, Venerable Kumarajiva. Yeah, later there's some part, a bit of his background. Oh. So Tao Qing. So Qing Cao, the Qin dynasty, there are a few all called Qing, but by different emperor. So Tao Qing. Then there is also, so that is the earliest. Then the second is Yuan Kui Pu Ti Liu Zhi. Then number 3, Nan Bei Cao. So sometime after that, there is the North-South Dynasty, the Nan Bei Cao, the Chen Zhen Di San Zhang. Different translation. Number 4, Sui Cao. So, Sui Tang. So, Sui before Tang, then Tang Song Yuan Ming Qing. So, the dynasty before Tang. So Tang is around 700 plus, 600 plus or to 900 plus, thereabout. Yeah, 700 to 900. So Sui is somewhere in between. This Tao Qing is about 400 plus, 400 common era. Yeah, some of you may have better knowledge of Chinese history. So Sui Tang, Da Mo Ji Duo Yi, the Jing Gang Nen Duan, Borobolomi Jing. So you find that the different translators, even the title, they give slightly different rendering. We usually know this as Jing Gang Jing or Jing Gang Borobolomi Jing. The other translators, they actually include the descriptor. Yeah. So number 4, he translated as Jing Gang Nen Duan Borobolomi Jing. Yeah, so diamond, jinggang, neng duan, yeah, able to break, able to eradicate, able to cut off, break what? Cut off what? Defilements. Then the other one, number 5 is our favorite, our most famous, Tang Cao, Xuanzang San Zhang Yi. So it's Tang Xuanzang, yeah. So, his translation is "Neng Duan Jing Gang Borobolomi Duo Jing." Yeah, so he put the "Neng Duan" in front as a descriptor for Jing Gang. Then number 6, Tang Cao, also Tang Cao, Yi Jing San Zhang Yi, the Fo Shuo Neng Duan Jing Gang Borobolomi Duo Jing. Yeah, so 这当中, 法相中, 是受持, 玄奘, 大, 法师, 翻译的. Yeah, so. 法相宗, what is 法相宗? Basically, what we call 唯识 or Yogacara school. Yeah, so sometimes I mentioned about Yogacara Bhumi Sastra or the Mahana Sangraha Sastra, all this under 法相宗. Why is it called 法相宗? Because one of the bases is that it establishes the features of all phenomena, which is the Dharma, 法, 法相. Yeah, so it, through the description of all the phenomena, then it gives a framework on how to cultivate, hence called 法相. So my teacher is highlighting this because in our monastery, one of the key commentary is Yogacara Bhumi Sastra. So he highlighted this. Yeah, and our and Venerable Xuanzang is very well known. Yeah, but Jing Gang Jing, very interestingly, which one is more common? The one by Venerable Kumarajiva. So this whole text is mainly based on the one that he translated. So here, very quickly, Tao Qing. There are some details I can leave it to you all to go and read. So Yeah, the front part is about the Qing Cao itself. Just very briefly, to give people some background. Because my teacher is from Northeast China, so he knows a lot about the Chun Qiu Zhan Guo, the whole history. So sometimes when you attend his class, you learn about Chinese history also. So, San Zhang 就是 Jing Li Lun. Yeah, so, whenever we refer to a venerable as San Zhang Fa Shi, it means that this venerable has mastered the three collections, Sutra, Vinaya, and Abhidhamma, yeah, or the commentaries. Oh, so, Fa Shi 是以法为师, so has this meaning. In the Da Zi Du Lun, in various commentaries, there are different definitions of what Fa Shi means. One of them is 以法为师, that means whoever has the Dharma as the teacher, as their guide, in other words, is known as a Fa Shi. The more prevalent one these days is saying, oh, this person is teaching Dharma, a Dharma teacher, Fa Shi. Yeah, but the earlier days, when a person is considered Fa Shi, it's more like Dharma specialist. That means this person specializes in the Dharma, with Dharma as his guide, and so on. So, yeah. 以经历论做自己的师范, so as a guide. Yeah. 或以经历论为其他人的做示范, or guide others using the Dharma, Vinaya, and the Abhidhamma. So, a bit about 金波罗斯大师, he has father and mother. His mother is actually a princess. Yeah, from one of the country. His father is from India. His father's name is Zhumolo Yan. His mother is Shipo, or also translated as Qi Po. The reason is because the transliteration, when done, that same character is pronounced differently. So if you look at the whole range of translation, you can have a rough idea what it originally means or sounds like. So like now we of course we know Kumara Jiva. So Jiva sounds more like Qi Po. So that's Zhimolo Shi or Zhimolo Shen, that character in the past probably sounds different from what we know today. Yeah. So he is known as Luo Shi or Luo Shen Fa Shi. So his name actually comes from his father and mother, Zhimolo Yan and Zhimolo and the Qi Po combined together. And Zhimolo Yan, the meaning is Tong, yeah, a child, yeah, young child. And then Qi Po means life, longevity. Combined is Tong, Tong Shou. So what's interesting is, this Zhimolo Shi is from this place called Qiuqi Guo. Today is called Kuchan. Yeah, basically it's in the outskirt. Today is part of the western part of China. Yeah, western part of China. In the ancient times, it's a separate country. Yeah, with his own kingdom. The father was from India. The mother is actually a princess. And the father, very interestingly, is very talented. So the king in one of the country wanted to offer him to become a minister. He rejected. Oh, how many of you, if you are given an appointment, you will reject? He rejected. Oh. Yeah, throughout Buddhist history, a lot of the very talented monks, they rejected all the offer. Yeah. So what happened? 他拒绝了，就是要他做宰相. 后来出家做比丘, but he decided to become a monk. Yeah, quite different from our conventional media. You know, when we watch movies, who become monks and nuns? All those kena dumb lah, family business go down lah. What, you know, 想不开 lah, then go to the mountain, then 师父, 让我出家吧. Yeah. But actually, if you look at history, no. Usually not like that. Usually we can do very well, but then they start, what's the point of all this? Yeah, they decided to forsake worldly pursuits. So very interestingly, later on he went to this 秋次国. So the 国王, 因为他清高, feel that, wow, he's very lofty, you know. Yeah. So, and think, look at him and say, wow, this person, so talented, and yet forsake worldly pursuits and actually become ordained. So feel that, this person is indeed honorable and, you know, to be respected. So, wow, from far away, welcome him all the way to the country. And this emperor, has a sister. Yeah. And the sister has many suitors. A lot of princes from other countries wanted to marry her, but she rejected all of them. Then the brother who is the king, and then the sister who is a princess, both look at this Kumarajiva's father, Kumara something, the yen, I don't know what is the yen. 看中他. Then what happened? 现在他见到鸠摩罗燕就喜欢 有意要嫁给他, 因此和他的哥哥商议, 强逼他还俗, 而结婚了。 So when you are king, you can make things happen. So in the end, give birth to 鸠摩罗什. So fortunately for us, that happened. But very interesting. So, you see, at first, the father is a cultivator, become a monk. Then forced by the king and the sister to get married. But after getting married, is the wife, the sister who become the wife, right, for the, that who want to ordain war. Then what happened? So we must know, no. Hey, you don't go and sell it, they don't let you go and go there. But also quite funny, you want me to, like imagine, they got him to disrobe, then get married, then she herself want to go and ordain. But sometimes conditions, sometimes it's condition. So now she want to audit, he don't let her audit. Now you want to, don't let you audit. Then what happened? Later, she gave birth to another son. Yeah. So, 又生了鸠摩罗什的弟弟, Sātipo, Fusātipo. Yeah, so probably Fusātipo. Probably Busa Dipa or something. Yeah. So, then what happened? A lot of people say, oh, Sifu, I cannot ordain because my father don't allow, my mother don't allow, my girlfriend don't allow, my boyfriend don't allow, my neighbor's dog don't allow. Let's look at what she do. 这个鸡婆, 以不吃饭表示决心出家。 You don't like me ordain, I don't eat. Can we don't eat? Can. If boyfriend don't care, text us, we don't eat. Yeah. People don't let us ordain, okay lo, I eat more. Yeah. So 鸡婆决心, yeah, so 绝食, yeah, so never eat. How many days? 到第六天, 6 days. Yeah. At the sixth day, what happened? Kumarajiva's father agreed. Then you know what happened? 7岁的鸠摩罗什也随着母亲一起出家. So amazing. At that point in time, Kumarajiva only 7 years old. No? 7 years old already had the thought to ordain. No? We can always say, no lah, still small kid, so gong gong, mommy go where, You think if your mommy go and ordain, you want to go? Yeah. I don't think many people can do that. But today in Singapore, you cannot do that also. Child services will come after you. Yeah. So sometimes, when you look at history, and you look at the society, what is the norm in society really feels like it's correct. Well. But when you take yourself out of the societal context, then you realize that it's not always absolutely correct or wrong. It's just that the social norm has changed. Today the social norm is children must go through this. Last time, no, it's okay. 7-year-old can go and ordain. Yeah. Today, if that happens, I don't know. In Singapore, yeah, at the least, people will frown upon it. Yeah. So, a few more things about Venerable Kumarajiva. What is so special about him? His memory is super good. Yeah. A lot of the Buddhist masters all have very good memory. Yeah. So don't owe them money. but luckily, Wu Xiang, so owe, okay lah, no problem. Yeah, joking. Jimmy Lo is 有个特别的地方, 记忆力特别好. You think you have good memory? The description, 每日学经能背32,000字. 32,000 characters. He can memorize it. He can do that. He can do that. So, 法华经总共60,000多字. 若是他两日,二日就可以背完了. 法华经, not to mention memorize. You go and read. 2 days, you go and read. 华严经, don't know. You know, I spent how long is it? Amazing at these people. Yeah. But don't have to envy. 这个就是栽培的. Yeah. Usually, you ask yourself, how come he's like that, so special? You ask yourself, how do you conduct your day-to-day life? Do you do one thing at a time and really focus? Just now we talked about the practice. Nothing comes by chance. If you cultivate in this area more, then your mental energy, your mental strength and focus becomes more, yeah? You have more mastery over it. For us, all it takes is, dunno! Yeah, we have very little, not that we have no mastery, we have mastery, yeah. We have mastery over our phones. Actually, it's not that we have mastery over our phone. Our phone has mastery over us. Yeah. So, Jimula Siddhasi initially, he was learning the agamas. Yeah, the agamas. That means the Sravaka teachings. So we can say that he is what we call Xiao Chen. Yeah. In the records, he's basically stated as practicing the Xiao Chen Fa. Yeah, Xiao Chen Fa. So, 12岁这一年, yeah, so several years, some years later, 5 years later, 母亲领他回到自己的国家, 中途遇见一位大乘佛教的学者, so by then there's already Mahayana. By then there's Mahayana. So this person called 须弥耶苏摩, yeah, 须弥耶苏摩. So 因为 思想不同. The Buddha, in another sutra, he said, worldly people, what do they have conflict over? They have conflict over sensual pleasure. You want this, I also want this, cannot, I have it first. Then you fight. You go to the shopping center, then you want that cloth, the last piece, that person take it, then, no more. Can I have it? Cannot, fight. We fight over sensual pleasure. Then all the way down to ascetics and Brahmins. Ascetics and basically the cultivators. The Buddha said, what do they have conflict over? Views. cultivators, they have conflict over views. Yeah, my view versus your view. Yeah, arahants, no conflict. It's no longer a view. It's a fact. You don't agree, it's okay, no problem. Up to you. Yeah, so over here, they have a conflict. Yeah, 于是二人辩论. Yeah, so they start to have a debate. Venerable Kura Maharajiva, at that age, 12 years old only, no? Any 12 years old here? Yeah, how old are you? How old? Huh? 9 years old. Wow, so you are 2 years older than when Venerable Kura Maharajiva ordained. So you have 3 years to prepare yourself before you debate with me, okay? So, what happened? 这个君摩罗什辩输了，alas, he lost. A few things. When we look at the fact that he lost, it may feel like, I thought he's supposed to be some grandmaster, but at the age of 12, you must remember, his age of 12, no? That guy is an adult, and maybe already practiced how many years, but he was able to stand his ground to even have a proper debate. That's why I always highlight to students, you don't have to agree with me, but you must at least learn how to have a reasoned argument. Yeah, cannot anyhow just blunt him, you know. Yeah, because ultimately, even if you so-called lose the argument, do you actually learn something from it? That's even more important. Yeah. So, for Venerable Kura Maharajiva, he lost, but he gleaned something from it. 从此回小向大. So this phrase, 回小向大, that means from before that he was learning Agama Sravaka teachings, so-called Hinayana. Then after that he learned, he had through the debate, he lost. Usually when we lose, what happened? Okay, la, ling ya la, yi ling ya la. This is our usual way of losing. From this we know that he didn't lose in this way. He truly conceded defeat. Oh, you're right, oh. Oh, your viewpoint is more superior. Whatever stand I have, you managed to defeat it. That means whatever I hold to be true is false. And this is what we see in Venerable Kura Maharajiva. And also in the Buddha's time, even for the disciples from other schools. That's why they become the Buddha's disciple. Because when they came to see the Buddha, they were trying to defeat the Buddha in his teachings. But when the Buddha conclusively, categorically show that their stand is groundless, they concede defeat. They embrace what is the truth. They don't see si go si I ah. Or they don't like, but there were some. So the Buddha called, that sutra is called simile of the water snake. Yeah, the water snake simile. So anyway, 回小向大. So he realized that through the debate, he realized that the Mahayana path is more supreme. Yeah, so 成为一位大乘佛教学者. So he started to become a learner, a practitioner under the Mahayana tradition. Yeah, 又住一二年后. So after 1 or 2 more years, 就回秋兹国. Yeah, so went back to this Kuchan country, yeah, and continue to learn and practice Buddhism. But over here, there's a whole chunk about a bit of the history. So as he learned and he teach, his renown become well known. Yeah, he start to have a reputation. So what happened? Then we bring in China. 那时在长安. So Chang'an is the old capital. And there was a king there, yeah. And the king is Fu Jian, yeah. So also known as Fu Qing. So he heard of this Si Yu, which is the desert area, which is where Kuchan is. Heard about this, heard about Venerable Kura Maharajiva, wanted to invite him. So what happened? Send one of the general, Lü Guang, bring troops to invite him. How many troops? 领七万军队, 70,000. Is that a whole brigade? More than a brigade. 70,000. As though going for war. Yeah, so this is not just about Venerable Kumarajiva. Throughout history, a lot of the Buddhist masters are so sought after. Ironically, sometimes they go to war over it. Yeah, so quite fortunate. My reputation is not so great yet. So there's no war. Yeah, but even if our reputation is very great, today, in a way, it's safer. Because the secular state don't really value Buddhism. So you are free to come and go. Yeah, you are free to come and go. Hey, but in some countries, for the monastics to go overseas, you need approval from central government. Yeah, some countries still value the monastic a lot, so they don't anyhow let you exit, or you know, and for external ones to come in. So, send this Lü Guang 70,000 troops over. So, Venerable Kumarajiva somehow, not clear from my teacher's explanation, but somehow know about it and told the Kuchan Emperor, there is a general from this Chang'an coming. The troops, if when you encounter them, you may want to treat them with cordiality, you know, have some diplomacy with them, and not fight with them. If you fight with them, you will lose. So what happened? The king don't believe. When the 70,000 troops came, he went, then okay lor, kena wipe out. Yeah, kena wipe out. Amitabha. Now we talk like laugh. Last time, all these 70,000 troops, I'm sure some of the 70,000 troops also die. And this country, the troops also have families. Actually, a lot of people die. If you look at history, it's all bloodshed. No, nothing good. Yeah. So then what happened? Managed to, in a way, invite, but actually it's capture Venerable Kumarajiva back. But halfway through, this general is not a Buddhist. So along the way, basically like give him face, you know. Yeah, like, I have to bring you, you think I want to, you know, give him one kind of attitude. Halfway through, heard news that the main kingdom, the king has collapsed. Yeah, got overthrown. So he decided not to go back with his troops. He went somewhere. Let me see. Where did he go? Gansu. When he reached Gansu. Yeah, so it's very interesting when you look at the Chinese Mahayana Buddhist history. Because all these places are still in China and it's the actual place. Yeah, so Gansu Sibu. Yeah, so it's from Chang'an, then you have Gansu, then you have the Siyu part. So somewhere there, he just, okay, we just been Chen Wang. Yeah. But later on, and then the new king didn't do anything also. But later on, the son of the new king make a request. No fighting this time. So invited Venerable Kumarajiva over. So when was that? That is the time of Tao Qing already. Tao Qing. So the Tao actually comes from the Tao Chang. I think it's called Chang. Tao Chang, Tao Chang or Tao Chang, who is the one who took over. So the dynasty is named after him. So Tao Qing Hong Shi San Nian Shi Er Yue Er Shi Ri Zhe Yi Tian. So on that day, Chinese are very precise. Yeah, Indian, there was a time. Very different culture. Yeah, very different culture. Yeah, China, they will put first the dynasty name. Under this dynasty, maybe there are different subsection. Then after that, the reign of this ruler, how many years, and then how many months, and so on. I'll tell you very clearly. Yeah, so from here, we can actually know roughly the development of both Chinese history and Buddhist history. Then Venerable Kumarajiva arrived at Chang'an. And over there, the two of them, the king and him, are very amicable. Yeah, and together, when we say together, it's because together they did a lot of translation. When we say together, it's not that the king also do translation. is that the king gave all the material support required to do translation. Since 2009, I've been doing translation with my Dharma brother, just two of us. Very, in a way, we've tried our best. But we have the modern tools. We have access to the whole Da Zheng Zhang in the format that we can search. We can do contextual search, full text search. We can search online the research paper that is published by others. We have access to the Nikayas, the Agamas, different languages, and then plus all the things we have read, plus our teacher's explanation. And still we struggle. I've often mentioned one verse, sometimes 2 hours, the whole morning, no conclusion. Sometimes after everything, okay lah, I think we use back the original term. So, over the years, I really appreciate what they have done. Yeah. Now, from like a few chapters, sometimes at the start, we decided on one translation. Halfway through, I'll tell my Dharma brother, this word, I was thinking, almost there, but not quite there. What about if we use another word? Then he said, what word do you propose? So I said, how about this word? Then we discuss. And it takes time to conclude. And after concluding, then he must go and do the groundwork to go and search and replace. Now, word very simple. Google word doc, just search and replace. Yeah, he set up an Excel file to trace, and then we keep track of all the changes so that, because sometimes after a few months, I change my mind again. Sometimes he changed his mind, sometimes I change my mind. We take turns. Then we look at the records. Oh yeah, we changed from that to this. Now we want to change back. But at least we have a record. In the past, how they search and replace? No such a thing, no? Yeah, so one of my senior who is teaching in Taiwan, in his talk, he said, Venerable Xuanzang, some of the translation is not so consistent, Amitabha. When we hear this, it seems like it's a criticism. But from a translation standpoint, we can appreciate that it's that tough, Yeah. Because if it's just one paragraph, 2 hour talk, yeah, very easy. You just trace through, you can do it. But when it's volumes of text in the past, once you make one change, you have to replicate all the changes, And last time, it's not like, hey, which document, Word doc or what? And you just replace. Even if you don't use the search function, you just replace. Last time, it's a scroll. And how you replace, you have to remove the strip and then copy down everything. And copy away. Then miss out one character. Really not easy. Yeah, so together, they translated many texts. Yeah, among them is, of course, we know Jing Gang Jing, then we have Fa Hua Jing, we have Wei Mo Jie Jing, we have Ami Tuo Jing, and so on. Yeah, all together, in some of the records I saw, 70 over or 17 over? Quite a number of texts. Yeah, and as I mentioned before in other classes, Venerable Kumarajiva's translation tend to be easier to read. Venerable Xuanzang's translation is terser. Yeah. It's a bit curt in a way. Yeah. From translator's standpoint, my appreciation is this. Venerable Kumarajiva, he was not a Chinese. He's from Kuchan. So when he do translation, he probably, okay, if you get to meet him, you ask him, okay. But my guesstimation, is he would make more attempt to try to make it understandable for Chinese because he's not Chinese, yeah. And as a result, he used more Chinese prose and expression to do the translation. As a result, it's easier to read. Venerable Xuanzang, he's a Chinese, so when we translate from another language to our language, we are afraid that we miss out the original. So he tend to be more 直译, word for word. And as a result, it doesn't translate well. In a way that, the 语句 is a bit like, you know, yeah, not as flowing as the Chinese prose. And the reason is because, not that he gave the reason, but as I understand from this angle, the attempt to be as close as the original word. Yeah. So when we do translation, we should adopt both angle. Yeah, where possible, we do a literal translation so that we don't miss any character, as close as we can. From the Yogacara Brahmasastra Chinese translation, which is done by Xuanzang Dasi, not Chimulosa Dasi. Yeah, so it's a great privilege to do this. But sometimes when we do that, in English, sometimes the Chinese text can be condensed to just three lines. But then in Chinese, one whole chunk. So at times, not for convenience sake, but in order for the reader to understand and not get caught up with the wordings, so then we would do some condensation. In the Bodhisattva vow, there was one of the precept. We actually kept both copies. One is the more literal, one is the paraphrase one. Yeah, so that if you want to see more of the original, this is the one. But this is the one that we translated. Yeah. So next week, 2 weeks later, or whenever, the first week of the next month, today is what? 16. So the first week of next month, we'll come back, then we'll go into 正文. Okay? 愿消三藏诸烦恼, 愿得智慧真明了, 普愿罪障悉消除, 世世常行菩萨道, 阿弥陀佛, 起立。